Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care. Find out more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. And our thanks to HighSpeedWeb.net for streaming our signal 24/7, 365. Dr. Laura Ulrich is back with us today. She is well known for all of her dynamic years at Winthrop University, where she taught everybody about the economy. And now she moved on up the food chain. She's now working with the Federal Reserve up there in Charlotte, but she has been shuttered at home, at home for a few months, and it's easier to pull her out, come on in, because it's been insanity in your house with all the kids at home.
Yes, I feel like I'm running the little Federal Reserve Bank of Rock Hill in my home with three children.
So. And this is what is it? This is my very first interview with somebody who is wearing a mask.
Yes, I'm
and
wearing my mask.
I got that. She understands it. She's got reasons to wear it. But it's not becoming to you.
I know.
So, you've been with the Federal Reserve up there now, what, 2 years?
Year and a half.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, as it comes to this whole issue about the economy.
Yes.
And trying to recover from this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what you do at the Federal Reserve is track exactly what the heck is happening?
Correct. Yeah.
And what are you seeing?
Yeah, so we look at a lot of data from things that wouldn't be surprising to things like unemployment rates and unemployment insurance claims, but we also have access to some other high-frequency data. So, for example, total credit card spend, total debit and credit card spend, we have access to that data and some mobility data that show where people are going and how often. So we're watching all of that constantly. I mean, I'm the regional economist for North and South Carolina, so I'm paying attention especially to those two states. And a lot of the work that I do is centered on workforce development and education. So I recently wrote an article about the plans of colleges and universities within the 5th District. We're looking at what the community colleges are doing as well and just trying to see how the economy is reopening and also how that's going, how it's tracking over time.
So as you track the two Carolinas, true or false, are you seeing, data that would indicate people from some of these large cities are actually picking up and looking for another place to live that's a little less dense?
Yeah, really good question. We have definitely heard from economic developers that they're getting more calls from big cities with people inquiring about coming to the Carolinas. Obviously, we have places like Charlotte, Raleigh, who are, already two of the fastest growing metro areas in the country.
Yeah.
But they still don't have anywhere near the population density of a Washington, D.C. or New York or Boston or places like that. So that does make it more attractive. I do wonder, in the past couple of weeks, both the Carolinas have gotten more press about our rising COVID numbers. So yeah. I do wonder, that can impact some of those requests probably for the time being. But I think over time you will see some companies look at where they do business and exactly how they do business. Because right now, being located in a big city where most of your employees are having to take public transport is just really complicated.
Boy, you hit that nail on the head. I mean, we all know what happened up in New York City when this thing broke out. And I think that I've talked to several local realtors, and they're actually seeing people that are calling, looking for options because people don't want to be packed on top of each other.
That's right.
That's what one of the lessons from the virus.
Right. And I think, it's funny because I have some friends that live in New York City and they're rarely at home. They eat out almost every night. They're out and about. They're in the park. They're, doing all these things. And then all of a sudden this happens and they're in this tiny little 1,500 square foot apartment with three kids. And that's a big apartment in New York, right? And it's not near as fun as it was before. But even my own house, you know, I'm working from home with three kids. We have a pretty open floor plan. My, quote, office has no door on it, right? So that's something I had never thought about before. But all of a sudden, when you're working from home and your kids are at home and you're trying to do e-learning and all this, you do think about your space in a different way. So I think you're going to see all sorts of trends that come out of this where people say, no, maybe I do want this open floor plan. Maybe it's not exactly what I want. Or maybe I do need a separate space for working or for educating my kids or whatever. So there's going to be some long-term trends.
In fact, that's exactly what one of the realtors had told me, was the fact that people now are looking for some type of a house that's got an office space in it. Because what we're seeing here, and maybe your data is showing this as well, you're shuttered at home. I can tell you all the people at Comporium are shuttered at home.
Right.
All the ones at Williams and Fudge, same thing. List goes on. And they're finding out that this works pretty good for a lot of people.
That's right. So I can get the same amount of work done, right? I can get my work done. It's just, can I do it without feeling like I'm going to pull my hair out?
You've got to repeat the morning scene at the
I was sharing with Manning that I have three boys. I have a 12th grader, an 8th grader, and a 5th grader. And I said, I feel basically like I live in a fraternity house right now, because I get up in the morning and there's food all over the place and there's somebody sleeping on the couch. I can't really identify who it is. And they've clearly been up all night long. And I just don't even care, because they sleep till noon or so and I can get some work done. So I feel like all the parenting rules and, you know, all the restrictions I had on them are just completely out the window at this point. It's more about survival.
So at the Federal Reserve, I mean, how many roughly people are up there in the Charlotte office where you are?
Yeah, great question. So there's, I believe it's about 40% of our workforce in the Charlotte branch is working. They're considered essential workers. And we move all the cash for all of the Carolinas. So any $20 bill that you spend eventually comes through our basement before it goes back out to a bank or into an ATM. So we have lots of money coming in and lots of money going out every day. So people have to count that cash. And so there's a lot of people who work in our cash department that are essential. And then, as you can imagine, to protect the cash, we also have a very sizable law enforcement unit that is quite essential. So they're working, and then we also have a few facilities people that are working. But beyond that, and I think maybe an IT person or two to help those units. But other than that, the rest of us are gone. But I think, you know, they have told us very clearly that we will not be aggressive about coming back. Those of us that are working from home have the hardware and software and capability of doing that work from home. So they're being pretty conservative about bringing us back.
So how do you like it?
It is not my favorite working environment. You know, I'll say, though, I actually think this is a really important thing for the economy and recovery. You know, I've been a working mom the whole time I've been a mom. I mean, I had two babies while I was getting my PhD. I mean, I'm pretty risk-loving, you know, I'm pretty aggressive about things. And but this time has been really hard because you know, I'm trying to work and be a good employee and, you know, still trying to grow in my career, but also responsible for these three children and then their schooling that comes along. And so I think a lot of people, myself included, are just craving normalcy, but not, maybe not even normalcy, but stability, right? Knowing what's going to happen, just for things to be clear. So if schools do open, are they going to stay open, or are we going to go straight back to e-learning, or, you know, what? It's very hard to plan in this environment. So I do think that's important to the economy, because we have a lot of working parents and grandparents who have responsibilities for children. And so there are a lot of employees right now, a lot of workers who are kind of waiting to see what the next few months is going to look like for them.
You know, it's one thing if you have a 12th grader.
Yes.
Like right? You don't have to worry about them.
Right.
But if you got somebody in fifth grade, that's a whole other story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, making sure he's doing what he needs to do is very difficult. And the 12th grader, too, because it's like he might tell me he's doing one thing, but may not be doing that, you know. Fifth grader, I haven't figured that out yet. But yeah, it's a real challenge. And so as companies open up and bring, you know, I'll give you an example. So I was joking with somebody, but it's really true. When my company asked me, do you like working from home? Well, no, not really. Are you ready to come back to the office? Yes. How ready are you? Very ready. Can you come back? No. Because I've got these three kids that I'm having to educate, right? And I may have to do that this fall. So so there's a mismatch between what people want to do professionally and what they're able to do because of the responsibilities that they have.
This has nothing to do with the Federal Reserve, but I'm curious now because you're a working mom. You got three kids. The big question mark you've got in your head is what is school going to look like this fall?
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, the president chiming in.
Right.
We've got to get these people back to school, da-da-da-da-da. The risk to students is very, very low in terms of whatever. How do you perceive all of that?
So actually that does have a lot to do with my work at the Federal Reserve because I do a lot of work on education. And so I am paying very close attention to the plans. And as you can imagine, whatever the schools decide to do heavily impacts the workforce because then employees do have to shift. I think it's a catch-22. I mean, everybody, I think, who's been at home with their kids since March wants their kids to get back to school. However, consistency is important, and so I think many people are worried that they might go back to school and then there's a COVID outbreak in the third grade, so they shut down the whole school for 2 weeks. And so the consistency, you know, how do you handle that? I also do think that you know, there's been some people who have said, well, teachers, because teachers are more at risk, like the students may not be at risk, but what about the teachers and staff? And I do think there's a lot to be said for that. If you look at some of the other essential workers, their companies have paid them more to be at work and have paid them some shift differentials and given some bonuses. And unfortunately, because of what's happened to state and local revenues because of the recession, that's unlikely with teachers. And so, you know, to ask teachers to put themselves at risk is a tough ask if we're not going to pay them more or maybe pay them less even in some places, right? So it's I do think having a functioning education system is a major part of having a functioning economy
and a life.
Yeah, absolutely.
A normal life.
And not only that, but you also have to worry about what the kids are achieving, right? And what they're learning. Are they mastering topics? You know, so.
Sure.
It's not like they're going to give these kids a free pass forever because they didn't learn X subject, right? So, so you know, I know school districts. I speak to a lot of people in school districts and at colleges and universities, and they're working very hard to make the best plans they can, but it's not going to be perfect.
No, and as Dr. Cook said here just on Monday, whatever we announce this coming Monday, whatever our plan is for reopening schools, by the time August rolls around, we might have to shutter these plans because of whatever the status is and the CDC regulations, et cetera. So don't get your hopes up because you don't really know what's going to happen until it happens.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right.
All right. So you monitor a lot of what's going on with education. And I would imagine at the college level and really, I guess, at the public school level, what we're seeing here is pretty much what you're seeing across the Carolinas?
Yeah. Across the Carolinas, yes. There are some different patterns, though, in some other states. And I do think that there's still time for things to change as well. You may have seen this week that, like, University of Southern California, who had announced they were coming back in person, changed course and said, no, we'll be virtual.
What about Harvard?
Yeah, and then Harvard. Yeah. And you've got these schools that are, you know, very well-respected that are choosing that path. In the Carolinas, almost all schools are announcing that they are going back in person. However, if you look at the classes that are being offered at that school, they are all offering a lot of online classes.
Oh, yeah.
So I think what schools are trying to do is bring people back to campus, number one, so they can retain their students. Number two, so that they can get the auxiliary revenue that's associated with those students attending. So that's things like housing, dorms, and food. Schools rely on that money for revenue, and especially private schools. That's especially bigger deal at private schools.
You don't want to see, I'm sure, Winthrop just makes them sick when they have to write refund checks in the millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
They don't need that.
Right. And I think that, you know, I think one of the things that people don't understand, there's kind of a misconception about, I've found generally, is that state and local governments can't run operating deficits. So the federal government, I mean, this year, I think the last estimated deficit for just this year, I saw, was $3.7 trillion. Just unbelievably large. When I first started teaching economics, the national debt wasn't that large, I don't think. And now that's our one-year deficit. Well, the federal government can do that. State and local governments cannot. They have, for the most part, have balanced budget amendments. And so if tax revenues go down, cuts have to be made. And so deciding where those cuts are made are very tough, right? But education, K through 12 and higher ed in general, when there's recessions and revenues fall, they do have budget cuts. Yeah. The really tough thing right now is that this is happening at a time when their expenses are really going up.
Right.
Right. I mean, think about how much it's going to cost to do all the testing of students and the mask and the cleaning supplies, right? I mean, all the costs that go along with this, all the increased technology that's going to be needed for virtual learning. It's
and that's
really
why the CARES Act is pumping money back to the states to hand out, you know, to places like Winthrop and USC and Clemson and the rest of them.
Yeah.
To help us, you know, help with those
that's
expenses.
Right. But that money is limited on what it can be spent on.
Right.
And it helps. It helps. Don't get me wrong. It definitely helps, but it's not enough to fill the gap. So these schools are going to have to figure out how to educate students with the money they're going to have and to keep everybody safe. It's just a very tall order. And so I think as people who use these institutions, right, as parents with kids in K through 12 or parents with kids in college, we're going to have to give these institutions some grace and understand that they're just – they're doing their best in just a very tough situation.
So, what's all the data telling you about
the
state of our economy here nationally? And really, I'm just concerned about the Carolinas.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'll talk about two things. The first is I'll talk about the job loss. In April, we lost 20.5 million jobs nationally, which is an unbelievably high number. And the peak during the Great Recession was 800,000 jobs in 1 month. And we lost 20.5 million in 1 month. So if you think about the graph, like the way the graph looks, the axis has changed permanently, right? In May, we gained 2.5 million jobs back. And in June, we gained 4.8 million. So if you look at it from April, that from when the pandemic really took off, the end of March, that's a net loss still of 13.2 million jobs in the United States. And South Carolina and North Carolina have basically seen their share, their proportional share of those jobs lost. So some jobs have come back, but some haven't. Many haven't. The majority haven't, right? And some of these job losses are permanent.
And what sectors of the economy are you seeing
good
that?
Good question. So as you can imagine, right when this happened, it was mostly in accommodation and food services. So hotels, restaurants, bars, not surprising. As time went on, though, that changed a bit more in manufacturing over time. That was especially in South Carolina driven by the large auto manufacturers closing for several weeks. And so, you know, BMW plant in Spartanburg, the Volvo plant in Berkeley County, they were closed. That doesn't just impact those plants. It also impacts a large number of other firms that supply to those plants. And I think the last statistic I saw was about 30% of manufacturers in South Carolina are in the automotive industry. So many of my contacts in those firms, you know, did report that they had to shut down for a period of time. Many of those have reopened, but they may not have reopened to full freight. So maybe they were running three shifts before, but now they're at one shift or two shift. Because there's still supply chain issues.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, a lot of supply chain issues. And then other things like healthcare, and it's not, obviously, like, we're not seeing ICU nurses laid off. But healthcare, dental offices were closed for a long period of time. So up front, a lot of dentist office jobs closed. Also anything that is elective, you know, surgical centers and things like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And that really hurt the hospitals and therefore they had to lay off some people.
Correct. And now some of these hospitals that had opened up for elective surgery are now closing down to it again because the COVID numbers, I don't know if you've seen, but I think it's 30-something hospitals in Florida are now at complete capacity. And so even I've heard in the Carolinas, there are some hospitals that are saying we're going to stop doing elective surgeries until the surge stops here. We don't have hospitals that are at capacity yet, but
And I can tell you the domino effect on that is tremendous.
Absolutely.
Because you got all the surgery, the doctors,
yeah,
the nurses.
Absolutely.
The list goes on and on.
Physical therapists. Ah. Yeah, absolutely. So those were the main industries where we saw people laid off. And then also in things like think about janitorial services. So,
sure,
you know, all these office buildings that are closed, yeah, they don't need the same services they would normally have. So things like that as well.
All right, we're going to continue this very interesting discussion with Dr. Laura Ulrich after we take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy. Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. And, of course, we hang out here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. The magical way we do it is in the cue card in front of us all. We're going to say it loud at three. One, two, three.
Slice, 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 slice. Garden, garden, garden.
All right, back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
This is Dr. Karen Jenkins, Emergency Room Director at Piedmont Medical Center. When someone is experiencing a life-threatening emergency, such as a stroke or a heart attack, every second counts. Piedmont Medical Center's emergency departments in Rock Hill and on Gold Hill Road in Fort Mill are open 24/7 to treat life's unexpected emergencies. Even in the middle of a pandemic, our commitment to providing safe, high-quality emergency medical care in our community remains strong. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling. If your home or business is damaged by water, fire, storm, or mold, Paul Davis is here to help. We are staffed with over 35 trained and certified professionals to handle any type of property damage. Our team mission is to provide extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Whether you need repairs in one room or rebuild a whole home, Paul Davis is here to help. Find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
This is Charlie Ruffalo. I want to personally thank everyone for supporting Substation 2 during this pandemic. This has not been an easy time for many of us, but you keep coming back day after day for our fresh subs and salads, and that has helped us keep the doors open and our employees on the payroll. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rock Hill and York County, for supporting Substation 2 these past 34 years, and especially now. Substation 2 really loves you. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Have you been personally managing your investment account? Are you happy with your results? Maybe you should consider hiring a genuine money manager. If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see how they can help you. Anderson Griggs, 324-5044, or online at AndersonGriggs.com.
Comporium's Cloud Voice Services delivers carrier-class cloud PBX and hosted business phone services with all the features expected from a traditional phone system, plus unified communications, instant messaging, mobile apps, video conferencing, and more. Business Cloud Voice takes away all the guesswork by offering a cost-effective, pay-as-you-grow service. It doesn't skimp on quality or features. It won't hurt the bottom line, and it will continue to deliver innovative services year after year. Learn more online at business.comporium.com.
Are you looking to relax, spend time with the family, or cruise the open road with your new motorcycle to get away? Founders Federal Credit Union is offering low interest rates on recreational vehicle loans. Whether you need a boat, jet ski, ATV, camper, or a motorcycle for your next adventure, we can help. Relax, it's time to play. Visit foundersfcu.com to see if you qualify for membership. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
Back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Dr. Laura Ulrich is with us with the Federal Reserve. She's a regional economist for the Carolinas. She's based right here in good old Rock Hill, South Carolina. We're talking all kinds of things now. Your data. What is your data telling you about unemployment? Because, as you said, it's skyrocketed, and now it's getting a little bit better, but we still got a bunch out there.
It is getting better, but we look at two different things. We do look at the unemployment rates, which nationally is 11.1%, and for South Carolina, it's 12.5%. It's really interesting because all-time low for South Carolina was January 2020. All-time high was April 2020.
It's amazing.
It's insane. But what we also pay attention to are unemployment insurance claims. And this is, you know, really staggering because right now there are over 30 million Americans receiving unemployment insurance benefits.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yes. Which is around 19% of the workforce. Mm. The height of the recession, it was 4.8% of the workforce that was receiving unemployment benefits. And the reason for the really high number right now is because as part of the CARES Act, the federal government did two things. Number one, they expanded the definition of who could get eligibility of who could get unemployment insurance payments. So, for example, in the past, if you were self-employed, if you were a gig economy Uber driver, things like that, you can't get unemployment insurance because you're not paying into the system.
Right.
But they can get it right now through a program called PUA, which is funded by the federal government. And then also they did away with the requirement to be searching for work. So people can get the benefits without applying for jobs. And the reasoning for that is because over 80% of people during this pandemic that lost their job believed it was temporary. And for most people, it probably is, hopefully is, but for some people, those temporary job losses will become permanent. But most people, it happens so suddenly, so you can imagine you're a factory worker, factory's got to close. They say, Manny, you're an awesome employee. We don't want to lose you. We have to let you go, but we want to bring you back a month from now.
Okay.
So they did away with those job search requirements. So that has led to there being a lot of people on unemployment insurance.
And then, of course, for those who have reaped the windfall of the unemployment insurance plus $600 a week, that's coming to an end at the end of July.
Comes to an end at the end of July unless it's extended. There's debate over that. Looks like it may be extended but less money, or maybe it's done away with. But, yeah, you know, it's interesting. If you look at personal income in the United States, it actually went up during this time period, and it's because a majority of people who are on unemployment insurance in South Carolina anyway and North Carolina are making more on unemployment insurance than they did when they were working. Now, there's reason to do something like this in that we wanted people to stay home, and by paying them a lot through this system, we did encourage people to stay home. There's also another side of that where why would I want to go to work if I'm going to make more money on unemployment insurance? So we hear from most firms that when they've called people back to work, they have come back, that people have been eager to come back.
Right. Very quickly, I read the other day there's actually still a little bit of money left in the PPP program.
There is.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting because when they passed the second round of money, I remember hearing one of the SBA folks say they thought it wouldn't last 48 hours and it was never all spent. You know, there were some things about the PPP program that made it difficult for some firms to take advantage of. And
Sure. So
I think maybe the take up wasn't as significant as they thought. But then it's real. I talk to firms every day that say that money.
Oh, it's a big help.
I mean, a huge difference.
For a lot yes. of us included.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely.
Absolutely.
All righty. So here we go. You roll into the QT.
Yes.
To get yourself a cup of coffee, and you see this great big red sign that says, "We ain't got no change."
Yeah.
What's going on, Federal Reserve? You process all the money.
Yes. Yeah, so you may have seen these signs. I know Lowe's has them as well. QT has them in town that says that because of the Federal Reserve coin shortage, they can't give you change. There is a coin shortage. It is actually mostly happening because coin is just not circulating as much as it normally does. People aren't using as much cash right now. And then also, if you've ever seen those Coinstar machines in grocery stores, that's a large source of coin. That's where a lot of it gets recycled, and people just apparently are hoarding it in their house instead of taking it in the grocery store right now. So there is a coin shortage. The Federal Reserve does not manage the coin. The coin is managed by the Mint, which is the Treasury and private companies that roll it. But we do transport it, and it does come through our building. So we, our name is on all the signs, but unfortunately we don't print the coin. So we can't just magically create more, but they are trying to rectify the problems.
All right. We got 15 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
The boys and girls in Washington are talking about a second relief package, $1 trillion, $3 trillion. Presidents say, I want to be bigger than that. Does that bother you?
It bothers me because as an economist, I worry about the debt load of the United States. I do worry about that. There's economists, you could find another economist though that would tell you they didn't worry about it, but I do worry about it. It also bothers me depending on how it's spent and what it's spent on. I do think that state and local governments are going to need some additional support. But we have to make sure it's spent in the right way.
Dr. Laura Ulrich, you're wonderful to come on the show. I hope we can do it again soon.
Yep, absolutely.
You're a veritable font of information. Have fun at home with those kids.
Oh, I will always.
That'll wrap up our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Fresh subs and salads 7 days a week here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. There's only one way to do it, the Substation 2 way, which is 1, 2, 3.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
All right, have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.
South Carolina.